This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Latinos have been a presence in Michigan for more than a century. But even after all those decades, the Latino population is still experiencing significant growing pains. That's the conclusion of a major report from the Michigan State University's Julian Zamora Research Institute. With us now is the director of the institute, Ruben Martinez. Good to have you with us, Ruben.
Thank you. Good to be on your show.
What were you seeking to find out with this study that's titled Latinos 2025?
Well, we're trying to get a sense of the status of Latinos in Michigan and their well-being. And we were had intended to spotlight certain communities around the state and compare them to the overall state rates. And we started out with Southeast Michigan.
Give us a sense of how large is Michigan's Latino population?
We're at around 500,000. We're nearing 4.8% of the population. So that has doubled in the last 20 years and is continuing to grow.
So let's talk about the Latino population of Southeast Michigan. What would be the successes? What would be worth celebrating?
Well, one of them is that Latinos in the 2012 general election had significantly high rates of registration, voting registration, and getting out to vote. So that was very important. It was much higher than we find at the national level and at other points in time. And as I understand it, that may have been the result of some efforts at the local level to register and push Latinos to get out to vote, and also the issues that were prevalent and boiling over at the time. And I think much of that had to do with immigrant rights and immigration issues,
which we're going to talk about more, because that issue has not gone away by a long shot, has it? But you also found Michigan's highest labor force participation. Just what is that and what does it mean?
Well, it means that Latinos are participating in the labor force. They are working and they're seeking employment. And it means that they are proportionately participating at higher rates than other groups. But let me clarify what that means, because Latinos are a relatively young population group compared to, say, white Americans. So the white population is getting old, it is aging, and as they age out of the labor force. So Latinos, being a younger population, are therefore more likely to have higher proportion in the labor force.
All right, let's look then at the challenges, because your report finds the Latino community struggles in some very extremely key areas. What are the biggest?
Well, I think the biggest issue across the state and across the country has to do with increasing poverty. What we find is that poverty is not peculiar to Latinos, but we have higher participation rates in poverty, or higher poverty rates, if you will. So when we look at Latinos, at least from my point of view, they provide a window to some of the issues across the larger society. And then we ask ourselves, which are the ones that are peculiar to Latinos? And those have to do with language, incorporation, cultural differences, and so forth. But in general, what we have is increasing poverty. I mean, I was shocked to learn that over 50% of Latino children are growing up in poverty, and the rates are even higher among African Americans.
And education performance is tied in with that challenge too, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, poverty is a feature of life that impacts all aspects of one's life. It impacts health, it impacts educational attainment, it impacts the workforce skills that one gets and the kind of employment that one gets. It really pretty much determines one's life.
Why do you think there is such a gap between the needs of the Latino community and government initiatives and policies that are there to supposedly help?
Well, you know, for the last 40 to 50 years, we've been living in a period where free market fundamentalism has been the ruling ideology, if you will. That's the political views that are practiced and preached and made part of day-to-day life. And that perspective is one that emphasizes limited government, but by that they really mean limited government in the economy. So they want to deregulate the economy, they want to privatize government functions and so forth. And ultimately it's based on the view that all individuals should take care of themselves and their families, not depend on government. But that perspective, which goes back to the 1930s and 1940s, You know, every social movement and every political movement has its adherents, and you know, they also have their intellectual leaders. The adherents today have completely lost touch with the views of those who launched this perspective, if you will, who had a much greater sensibility about maintaining a safety net and being able to help people, even if there was to be, you know, greater freedom, so-called, in the economy.
Ruben, we know you were doing your research a year ago, long before Donald Trump's presidential campaign. But, you know, we heard Trump when he spoke at Birch Run recently, hammering at Mexico, talking about this, we're going to build a wall, Mexico is going to build it, the government's going to do it, and they're going to like it. That has to be really leaving a deep, deep impact in homes all over Michigan.
Well, you know, the immigrant population tends to live in fear because, you know, they're constantly being racially profiled. Their families are being broken up through immigration raids and so forth. So this is more alarming, you know, causes much more alarm in those families than previously. But, you know, Trump has a way of just letting words fall out of his mouth. He says things that don't make sense, that he provides nonsensical approaches to, you know, critical issues in society. And frankly, the number of people that support him when it comes to looking at the electorate or the number of voters that actually do vote, I don't think that's a significant proportion. But what he does do is play to the repository of sentiments, the
yes.
negative sentiments that people have, and he inflames them. And so, you know, that causes others to think that they can act out some of their hostilities. And in fact, we have seen cases where people have attacked immigrants and said, hey, Trump is right. So I think, you know, to me, it's just inflaming people to engage in that kind of family of violence.
Ruben, what do you hope will come out of your study? And what are the main issues you hope will become something on the front burner for our policymakers or service producers or community leaders?
The first and foremost priority is to create awareness both among policy leaders, but also among providers of services to different communities about the issues that are out there, and to help them understand that it's important to have to reallocate resources to be able to incorporate these different populations that comprise the what we call the Latino population, and to incorporate them into our institutions. But the other thing is, I'm hoping that it will broach a conversation, a public conversation about where we are going with our free market fundamentalist policies, what it means for the various populations who are negatively impacted, which is basically everyone who is working class or working poor, and that we begin to hold political leaders accountable for serving the public good rather than serving some unknown ideological point of view that most Americans don't care about.
The report is titled Latinos 2025, a needs assessment of Latino communities in the Southeast Michigan area, co-authored by my guest, Ruben Martinez, who is director of the Julian Zamora Research Institute at Michigan State University. Thank you so much for speaking with us today on Stateside.
Thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.